Hi, my name is Mike Gibb. I run AccountsRecovery.net, and I'm excited to bring you today's webinar on cost reduction strategy. Managing expenses is not something that gets talked about a lot within the ARM industry, and I'm excited to have a trio of great speakers today who are here to share their insights into this dark area of the industry. I hope we can shine a light on some interesting strategies, but also talk conceptually about how agency executives can approach their business and future decisions with an eye on the bottom line. This webinar is being generously sponsored by Microbuilt. You'll get the chance to hear more about them a little later in our program. I wanted to take a quick minute and say a few words about AccountsRecovery.net. AccountsRecovery.net is a news and information platform for the ARM industry. The site publishes unique and curated content, maintains a number of email newsletters, hosts webinars like this one, and offers a number of exciting podcasts for the ARM industry. The site is free for anyone in the industry to use and is a great resource of news and insights to help educate and inform. I hope you'll all spend a few minutes every day checking out what it has to offer. Now, let me tell you a little bit about today's speakers. Christian Lair is the Chief Operating Officer of Healthcare Collections, a third-party collection agency in Phoenix, Arizona. He is also the Arizona Unit Director for ACA International and a former president of the Phoenix West Rotary Club. Having been involved in the industry for a number of years, I can say he's one of the most knowledgeable and approachable individuals in the ARM industry. And I definitely learned something from him every time we talk, and I'm very excited to have him participating today. Donna Nicholson-Steef is Executive Director and Chief Compliance Officer at the Credit Bureau of Lancaster County Collection Services Division, where she oversees financial and operational functions. In addition to working at the Credit Bureau of Lancaster County, Donna serves the collection industry as Interim President of the Mid-Atlantic Collectors Association, as well as on the Special Committee on Small Agencies and the Council of Delegates for ACA International. She previously served on ACA International's Audit Financial Review Committee and ACA International Board of Directors. She was a recipient of the ACA's Unit Leader of the Year Award in 2010. Roger Weiss is the Chief Operating Officer of CACI and also runs a collection coach. He's been involved in the collections industry since 1992 and is a frequent speaker at events and conferences. The format for today's webinar will be a discussion moderated by myself. We encourage everybody to submit questions, and we'll get to them when the discussion has concluded. To submit questions, please enter it into the question tab on your Zoom webinar control panel. And today's event is an audio-only event. There are no slides or video components, so if you're not seeing anything on your screen, you're not missing anything. A recording of this event will be made available in the coming days on accountsrecovery.net. With the housekeeping items out of the way, let's start today's discussion. And Christian, I'll give you the honor of the first question. Let's start by maybe sort of setting the scene and talking a little bit about the areas where you see most collection agencies maybe overspending.
I know for us, one of the areas that we've come to see overspending are the sort of creep in subscriptions for cloud services. We've gone almost exclusively to cloud-based services for everything but our collection software. And it is somewhat insidious as you get those monthly invoices, you don't quite realize until you look at the end of the year how much that is costing you and whether or not that's a relevant expense. I think, you know, the traditional areas of expenditures, your telephones, your letters, your labor, you know, your collectors and administrative staff are ones that you keep an eye on. But that was one that we've noticed started creeping up with scheduled increases and sort of went by the wayside until we took a year-end review. So that was one area for us that we saw.
Can you give an example of you know, maybe what some of those cloud or some idea of what those cloud-based services might include?
For us, we're using, it's now named G Suite. It used to be Google Apps for Business for our email, our calendar, for, you know, what a lot of people use Microsoft Exchange for. We've gone online with Google for that. We also have our document imaging system as something that we've gone online with, cloud-based. And for some of our other services that integrate with our Google apps, our expense module, our CRM module, we've gotten a lot of items tied into that Google Cloud system because they all work together. And again, it just sort of becomes an incremental increase, especially as some of these services have built-in inflationary measures where we're going to, you know, raise it 10%. Because we need to, type of expense.
Got it. Thanks. What about you, Donna? Are there some areas where you see collection agencies overspending?
Well, first, I had no idea about the cloud creep-ins. We have most of our servers are on site. We do have cloud servers as well off-site with the company. But anyway, when I was reading the question, the very first thing that came to my mind, because we're currently going through this process, I think that unless for your collectors and for your account flow, unless you have system processes that are in place to prevent overspending, you're going to absolutely overspend with calls, collector time, letters. So what I'm talking about is having a strategy to where the computer, the system is set up with criteria to recognize low balance, low scores, how many letters are going out on those, how many calls are being made on those. And just knowing, prioritizing your account flow, you really can't do that without some type of score. So the score that we use is a driver for a lot of our decisions, letter campaigns and things like that. But if the controls are loose there, you could easily see you're in the red. Even if the debtor paid the bill, you'd still be in the red due to overspending. So some type of exhaust system in place is something we're going through now. We're tightening up on that.
Great, thanks. What about you, Roger, in your experiences? What have you seen in terms of some areas where collection agencies may not be being as judicious as possible with their expenses? Roger, you there?
Mike.
There he is.
There you are. Okay.
There you go.
Thought I was on mute there for a minute. Okay. So, I wanted to add a couple of things. And Christian, I think you brought up a great term when you said creep in the subscriptions, but I'm going to broaden the perspective of that. And I'm going to say creep in literally every element of your business, unless you're remaining diligently cognizant, conscious, and consistent about watching that. And let me paint a couple of very easy pictures for you. Typically, a lot of agencies don't have their time clock and their software tied together. So an employee will come in, they'll clock in, they'll go and get their coffee, they'll talk to their neighbor, see how the evening was last night. Maybe they're watching reruns of The Office. I don't know. But they'll talk about the antics of Jim and Pam and what they did to Dwight recently. Then they'll go back to their desk, and then they will get on the phone to make their first phone call. Maybe there's a bathroom break in the middle there too. So sometimes they'll clock in at 5 till their start time, but not start actually working until about 7 after their scheduled start time. So there's a lot of creep there. If you're a 10-person office, that's significant, but the bigger you are, the more creep that's involved there. Additionally, we found, and one of the best examples I can use is, we use Microsoft 360 for our contact centers and everything. So what we found is when someone would leave, and this is all an internal issue, when someone would leave, we weren't killing their subscription or reassigning it to someone else. So we would have someone, Joe, who left a year ago, would still be on subscription. But when Sally started, we would add a subscription to hers. Well, we were able to eliminate about $1,100 overnight in just waste when we started looking at that, and I put some internal audit functions in place or expanded those. So I think in everything that you do and everything, every process that exists, that creep can take hold unless you're consistently reviewing it. Donna brought up letters, and that's another great area. I know that Tim Collins he's out in California, an attorney, one of the smartest guys in the industry I know. He said that the best letter series strategy that he's ever seen is the validation notice. And that's it. However, a lot of times collectors don't know what to do next, so they'll send a letter when in doubt. So you might have a $75 account that's received 7 or 8 letters. It's just not valuable. So that would be my 2 cents worth on it. I'll let us move on because I could keep going.
Roger, can I jump in and just ask you one more question, or Chris? What about your credit card statements? Those fees sometimes fluctuate and go up without you even realizing it. Have you noticed that? With your bank statement?
Yeah, I'll jump in here. I'm actually on a program where there is a fee charged by my card processor separately, so I'm not actually paying those fees.
I should have clarified that when it's the collectors collecting the debtor monies over the phone or through your website.
That's what I'm saying. There's a fee charged by our processor. I know there's another program out now that does the same thing. We're using a different vendor. I'll leave it unnamed. But for us, that would be a tremendous expense. You're correct. But we've been using this program for the better part of 9 years now. I know it's a somewhat controversial question, but in our review and opinions we've got, that's kosher the way we do it. We don't keep any of the fee that's charged. It goes directly to the processor, much like anyone would if they used Western Union. So for us, that's not an issue.
Okay.
So, Donna, we're not doing that right now. However, I am looking at some options to do that because I would like to do that. I wholeheartedly agree with what Christian said, but to direct your directly, yeah, we do review our credit card statements. I don't do it monthly. I do it about quarterly, and the reason I do that is I do find a little bit of creep in that too. And what I'm told is, well, it's the way the card was processed, or if you're running them real time. So it's just as much on the information that the collectors are getting and how your agency is running the payments. Is it in batch and an overnight process, or are they doing it real time, as it is the actual credit card processor just bumping a little fee up here or there? I think that goes back to kind of base commerce and how they charge. It's kind of a fluctuating, moving target sometimes. But yeah, we keep a pretty close eye on that ourselves.
Okay, thank you.
At this point, I want to pause the discussion for just a minute and talk a little bit about our sponsor, Microbuilt. For more than 35 years, Microbuilt has been helping businesses assess and manage risk. They were a pioneer in the now exploding alternative credit data space, and as such have refined their products and services to deliver true business value. Over the years, Microbuilt has invested heavily in acquiring best-in-class data. They've built sophisticated systems for keeping their data fresh and accurate, and powerful predictive models for making decisions around lending, leasing, collections, and risk management. With Microbuilt, you can customize the products you need and how much you want to spend, and all their products are provided through a single, simple access portal. Whether you're working in originations or collections, screening a potential hire or tenant, planning for growth, or keeping up with industry requirements, Microbuilt can be your partner, providing the insight and information you need to protect your business, grow your bottom line, and keep your company running smoothly. For more information, please contact Microbuilt at 1-800-884-4747 or visit Microbuilt, and that's Microbuilt, Microbuilt.com. Again, thanks to Microbuilt for sponsoring today's webinar. And now let's resume our discussion. Donna, I want to ask you, you talked a little bit about in your opening remarks about, a diligence and an approach. I'm curious what advice or insights you can share about how a collection agency can determine if it's overspending in a given area.
Okay, so we rely on analytical reports, and we get them from some of the vendors that we use. So our scoring vendor is integrated into our software, and we use analytical reports to see it measures quite a bit. And the low scored individuals do bring in money. So you don't want to ignore them entirely, but you want to really scale back on how much time and energy you're putting into that. You want to put a little more time and energy into the higher scored individuals. But what you'll also see is patterns with clients. So you might find a particular client is rendering a high profit for you, and another one is super low. And when you do a little digging, you find out, well, half of them are in dispute. So it can detect even issues with your client. But analytics is really how we can quickly know what actions we are taking are rendering payment.
Excellent.
Thanks. A lot of times people overwork the wrong accounts. I took this question kind of from a different perspective, and I went broad with it. And how do we know if we're overspending in an area, or right spending, or sometimes underspending? And I always want to go back to collaboration and commiseration. I'm in a benchmark group. I know Christian is in a different benchmark group. And I have the fortunate of being involved in conversations on a weekly basis, and then a couple of three-day meetings a couple of times a year with a whole lot of guys a whole lot brighter than me that have a whole lot more answers than I do. But I'm a big believer in benchmarking and communication, yeah, with your closest competitors too, and just commiserating with them. Let everyone know. Let people know what you're seeing, what you're thinking, what you're feeling, and compare numbers, compare performance, and compare what you're seeing. You know, there's a great opportunity coming up here in a couple weeks in Nashville with ACA's convention, where you can network with a whole lot of people. And that's where I do a lot of my collaboration and commiseration, is at the different industry events. So that's how I determine if I'm overspending in different areas, because, and I think we've all been there, you're talking to a colleague and you say, yeah, I'm paying X amount of dollars for credit card processing. And they give you a look like an alien just landed on your head. And then you find out the greatest thing since sliced bread. And then you go back from the meeting and you chase it down. And next thing you know, you've got a new vendor partner that's saving you $5,000 or $10,000 a month. So that would be my perspective on it.
Yeah, and I'll second Roger's endorsement of benchmark groups. As you mentioned, I'm in one as well. And for us, the biggest thing I always recommend to people is measure. And that's the one thing that you find people aren't necessarily consistent at, is the measuring. And for us, it's not just, you know, looking at our books, but for our benchmarking group, we have a report that we send around monthly that gives our placements, our revenue, and then we measure some of our larger expenses, again going back to letters, phones, and your labor costs. The beauty of that is, not only do I get to see where I compare against these other agency owners that are, you know, run good shops and I have a pretty healthy respect for how they're doing things, but it gives me my history. So I've got 5 years of history to show me where those expenses have gone, whether they've gone up or down, and trying to see relative to the placements, relative to my revenue. So if they've gone up, but my placements have doubled in the last 5 years, I wish, but let's say that were the case, it's a percentage of how much I'm spending. So it gives me a apples to apples comparison. And I think that's one of the things that people, they'll look at the number and see it get bigger, but really the question is on a trend line. Is it appropriate? Is it not appropriate? And if you are able to get into a benchmarking group, or if you have some friends and you decide to form one on your own, it gives you a much better perspective of whether or not that's a number to be afraid of or upset about, or whether it's one to be proud of and comfortable with. So for us, that has been a tremendous help. And I think it's really given us a much better perspective on our expenses. It's also good when my benchmarking group also does the in-person meetings. We're ruthless with each other. And when we do share our financials and go over what we're spending, we'll question each other, because that's part of the role of what you want to do. You want to be there to not only support, but give a perspective that as someone running an agency, you're not going to get from your employees or anyone else. No one's going to speak to you that way and hold your feet to the fire when they see that your labor costs have gone up 20%, but you've not added any new people.
Very good.
Roger, you mentioned the $1,100 you saved overnight just by kind of going through your subscriptions and sort of rooting out, people who had left the company. But there are a lot of times where there are expenses where there's going to be an impact on the office, either fewer people or, getting rid of something that had been there for a while. So I'm curious how, if you have any advice as to how a collection agency should approach cutting back its expenses in a given department or area.
I do indeed. The two words, kind of the thesis of my points here, would be communication and change management. I'm pretty big on transparency with the staff. I went through a huge downsizing years ago and didn't develop an ulcer somehow. But I want to talk about the communication and the change management elements. But before I do that, I want to warn everyone, especially in this area, be sure to not cut pennies that's going to cost you dollars. Meaning, if you're spending $300 a month for a service, but that service is making you $2,500 or $5,000 a month, or saving you $5,000 worth of headaches in a different area, you might want to keep spending those pennies because in the longer run, it's going to be very well worth it. So when you're looking at making significant changes, for example, we had talked about this a little bit before coming into the room with everyone, but this is literally a discussion that I have probably a dozen times a year with my friends and colleagues, and that is how to cut expenses in administrative areas. And again, going back to Christian's earlier statement, you've got to measure. So you measure what needs to be done, and you measure who is doing what and how much of it they're doing. In one of the areas of creep that I have located in the past, sometimes we find people who get things offloaded from their plate, but they still take X amount of work, but they stretch it to Y amount of time to make sure they're filling their day so nothing else gets put on their plate. So by measuring and cross-training, you're able to see what a good time requirement for a certain task is. And when you're able to fill a person's plate with X amount of tasks and time, make sure you have strong backup for it too, you're able to look at what kind of reduction might be available. Another thing that people are looking at is a reduction in the necessity of administrative services and staffing through simply not credit reporting anymore, because as we all know, following up on those credit disputes, and a lot of times they're the silly and frivolous ones that you still have to take some kind of, you have to do something with, it takes a lot of time and therefore efforts. I know a couple of agencies that have 3 to 5 people each doing nothing but handling credit reporting disputes, and they are considering eliminating credit reporting altogether to eliminate the need to address those items. So they're currently in an ROI evaluation to see if that juice is going to be worth the squeeze. When you do make a decision, I would highly encourage you to over-communicate to everyone and put a change management plan into place where everything is lined out, all of the stakeholders have ownership and buy-in in the plan to help it go as seamlessly as possible. I believe that the only seamless plan is one that is never executed. You're always going to have hiccups and flaws when you're dealing with people because we don't know how they're going to react to anything at a certain time with certain events in their lives. But that's my best advice. Just communicate, and have a strong and solid change management plan in place.
This is Donna. I could not agree more with Roger. One of the things that we analyzed is this job really a full-time job? Could this job be a part-time job? And then we cross-train other people in case that part-timer is out. So I'm a big fan of cross-training, big fan of having up-to-date SOPs on your processes in case someone's out. But we have found that not a lot of the jobs require full-time people. And if it is, if you do have full-time people, which we all do, get them cross-trained. Find out what other skill sets they have. You'd be really surprised that somebody that might be dealing with debtor dispute letters is also pretty savvy on a computer and might be able to import new business that's coming over automated. Or you just never know where you can split that up and cross-train. As far as stopping credit reporting, I have to agree with that as well. Our eOSCAR was nothing but repeat robo-disputers. Very, very few actually wanted to get something cleared up and then ended up paying. The other thing with credit reporting is it's nothing but a trap for the Lexington Laws of the world. Most of our threats have come from debtors that hired Lexington Law that went on to the online credit report, disputed debts that really, really weren't disputed, but they disputed it, and then they sit back and wait to see how long it's going to take you to code it back as a dispute or to investigate or whatever the case may be. And it was just not rendering, it wasn't rendering the profit for the cost. And at one point in time, it did. But now the Fair Isaacs has new scoring models, and all of the banks are on them, and it just places a lower priority on medical, and it's just not what it used to be. So we decided to stop credit reporting also, and then we moved those people into other roles that were more lucrative for us.
Yeah, I'll go ahead and second what both of you said. The communication for, I think, any company is the key, especially when you're talking about cutting expenses, which a lot of people view as cutting jobs. And as we all know, that's not always the case. I am going to make a plug for the PPMS program that ACA has. We're a PPMS certified agency. And the idea of doing the continuous improvement projects for us remove some of the stigma of the cost cutting, because it encourages our employees to view it as improving the processes. Hopefully that means reducing the amount of time it takes, reducing the overall expense, not necessarily through cutting people, but by streamlining processes. And it has really allowed us to sell, as we complete these continuous improvement projects and move on to the next one, we encourage our staff to identify an area where they think it could benefit from a deeper review and a involvement by management as well as by our programmers, because we do have a programmer on staff to help streamline our systems, which do result in less time for the given task that we're trying to improve. And again, it not only gives you the buy-in, but it removes that stigma. And I can't recommend that process highly enough. It goes right along with, you know, what both Roger and Donna said, you communicate, and you get that buy-in where it makes people's lives easier, hopefully, by improving your processes. They love that, but it also reduces your overall time to get that task done, which means you can distribute more tasks without having to hire additional people.
Right.
I think everybody, the panelists as well as everybody listening would agree that, you know, compliance costs are certainly one area where expenses have skyrocketed in recent years and really kind of show no signs of slowing down anytime soon. So what I'd like to do maybe is get a sense from the panel or perspective or ideas on some ways that agencies can maybe better manage their compliance related expenses. Christian, maybe you can start first.
Well, going back to the credit reporting, we routinely on a yearly basis take a look at what we believe are accounts that paid because we had credit reported, accounts where we've had no communication for a period of time, where it was credit reported and then money comes in sort of unsolicited, if you will, or we have contact from the person after we've ceased our active collection efforts to determine whether or not the credit reporting impacted their decision to pay. For us, it's still a positive, so we're continuing to credit report. And I will say there are services out there now that greatly assist in the streamlining of the dispute reporting. There's some vendors out there. I'll let you guys look them up, but we've hired one of them, and it's had a tremendous impact, about a 10 times decrease in the amount of labor it takes to respond to disputes. So continually looking at what you're spending, where you're spending it, measuring it, but as you know, Roger and Donna pointed out, going to industry events, speaking to other people in the industry, doing that commiseration, you'd be surprised at the number of vendors out there that specialize in not only our industry, but certain areas of our industry where, you know, there's a savings to be had if you can automate something. The other thing that I've seen, and this is from other people I've talked throughout the industry, it seems as though the 50-state licensing, which was sort of the gold standard of a collection agency, is becoming less and less important only because of the cost for each of these states, what they charge, the cost to maintain the licenses, the bonds, and to manage that process. I talked to a number of people who said, you know, I'm just not doing it anymore because there's just not enough business in certain states relative to what they charge. And, you know, I make that clear to my clients and prospects that there are certain states where we're not collecting in, or we may go back to collecting in it if the value is there. But if not, we're just not going to bother with that state's onerous licensing requirements.
Right. I think for me, when I think about cutting costs, when it comes to compliance, that's kind of near and dear to my heart. And like Roger said a little earlier, you don't want to be penny wise and dollar foolish. What my approach is, am I cutting corners or am I cutting waste? We don't want to cut corners because that implies that you're putting yourself more at risk, maybe cheapening the work. Sometimes the expense of compliance, even though it's not necessarily rendering a profit, it's helping you to keep your profit. The collectors bring the money in, your compliance measures help you keep the money, help you not get sued. So, but like Chris said, using vendors, we use a lot of vendors to do work for us that would take us forever. There's so much that a vendor can do for you and quickly to help you comply, and then in tandem work with your internal programming and your software. Sometimes we just have to spend where it's necessary, and compliance is where we wouldn't want to cut too much, but it can be work smarter.
So One of the things that I would go back and endorse what Christian brought up is a plug for ACA's PPMS program, and more to the point, the softwares that help you manage that. What I've recognized is with the nonconformity trending and tracking, as well as the continuous improvement projects, it really helps you stay on task and manage to what you do need to do and what you can eliminate. Again, not cutting corners, but cutting out, eliminating the waste and the things that aren't needed are so critical to running any business. I mean, I don't think any of us are looking at 50% margins anymore, nor are we going to see them anytime soon. And if anyone figures that out, please let me know. That would be pretty cool. But I think that having a system like that, a compliance management system, is pretty important. I do notice that we did get a couple of questions in here, one of which directly goes back to, and I'm going to jump on you here, Mike, just a little bit, to what I was talking about earlier about when you do realize there's an area for an opportunity of reduction, how do you approach it? Well, outsourcing and automation is one of the great ways. And the question is, what areas do you see if it makes sense to increase spending as a way to effectively cut costs? And there are some ways to do that. We do a lot of medical, and when you can do outsource to an insurance discovery partner or something, they can identify some accounts that you can target on. So rather than having three people just go back and search each account, maybe you have one person that simply goes and verifies the information that you get. So whereas that service might cost you $2,000 a month, you're able to reallocate $4,000, $5,000, or $6,000 a month in personnel to possibly collector seats that can generate an additional $5,000 to $10,000 to $15,000 a month in revenue for you. So you're taking an expense, you're spending a little bit of money to make a whole lot more on the backside. And then the other question is, what size companies are the speakers? I have a mid-size agency. We've got just right around 50 people, and I will let Donna and Christian speak to the size company that they have.
This is Donna. We have 10 collectors along with admin.
And this is Christian. Sorry, Donna, I didn't mean to interrupt. Christian, we're about 40 people.
Thank you. I guess, Roger, does it mean I can take the rest of the webinar off? Is that what you're offering to fill my shoes for the next 20 minutes?
No, I just wanted to address those questions, because one was very germane to the question that we had just talked about. So sorry for cutting into your time.
No worries. Well done. I have no issue. But I will come back to you with the next question, because you did bring up the word outsourcing, and I know that that's often used as a way to try and reduce expenses. So I'm curious if you could speak maybe to a process that a collection agency should have when approaching a decision of whether to outsource a particular job function or whether to keep it in-house.
Absolutely. Again, in my opinion, it's just an ROI case study. You're going to do what does it current? So assuming that you're currently doing the process, you would assume the costs that you're doing internally and then weigh them against the cost of outsourcing it. But remember, and a lot of people leave this out, there's not just a cost to outsourcing a function. There's also a cost to, once you have that information back in-house, you still have to do something with it. So if you're able to eliminate five people from a position, so you're going to save, let's say, $15,000 to $20,000. We'll say $15,000, and the product costs you $5,000. Well, your net isn't going to necessarily be $10,000, because when you get the information back from that $10,000 savings, or from that $5,000 cost for your new outsourcing partner, what are you going to do with the information? The easiest and best case that I could use would be skip tracing. You develop all of this great information, or data analytics. You get a ton of great information, but unless you take action on that information's worthless. So now not only have you eliminated an internal process and outsourced something, you've wasted money on the outsourcing because you haven't planned ahead far enough to say, when I get this information back, that's how I am going to, I'm going to treat it in some form or fashion, and there's going to be an associated cost with doing that.
Does that mean then that it's just, I mean, you started to talk at the first about doing the ROI cost benefit analysis, and then you kind of followed that up with, you know, sort of making sure you've got that, you know, that sort of there's a, I guess maybe sort of an X factor or an intangible in terms of making sure that, you know, you're able to integrate that information, or, you know, use that information that comes back to you. Does that mean then that it's not, you know, that there's, I guess, I'm trying to think of the right way to ask this without, let me put it this way. Is it possible to do a sort of a fully formed ROI or cost benefit analysis when making that decision?
Hopefully yes, but sometimes no. Mike, I think you nailed it on the head when you said kind of that X factor. As much as we want to believe that we're going to take into consideration all things, we're not always going to take into consideration all things. And one of the things that I've been more diligent on is getting more and more referrals from different potential vendors, especially when it's a new process. I want to talk to 5 or 6 people that actively and currently use the new tool, so I can say, what should I expect, and what happened that you did not expect, to try to shorten my learning curve a little bit, to where when you are putting your cost benefit analysis together, you can consider all of those costs involved. But yeah, I do strongly believe that there are some things that are an X factor that you're never going to holistically consider until you've walked in those shoes and down that road. As an example, I see we got 54 attendees on, and how many of us have been through one or more computer conversions? I would bet most, if not all of us, have been through a computer conversion. And every one of those conversions have been, air quotes here, seamless, because we've gone through conversions before. But there's always something that's a little glitch. Maybe it's simply a version of a program that doesn't play nice, and you simply have to do that. Or maybe it's that your imaging doesn't play nice with your new system, and you didn't think about that consideration. So whatever that might be, yeah, there's going to be an X factor that you're not going to consider. But what my point is you have to consider not just the service, but your additional internal costs, as well as the costs that you are eliminating.
That makes sense. Thanks. Christian, Donna, you know, looking at this sort of outsourcing versus in-house debate or decision, any advice or insights that you want to share, maybe from some experiences you've had with that situation?
This is Christian. I agree with what Roger said, and I would add, how much is it going to cost you, or how much is it going to hurt your company if that outsourced service goes away for a day, a week, a month? It's always something that we keep in mind. As much as you can get references and you can trust in the outsourced vendor, if you're only saving a little bit by outsourcing it, but the potential to have that service go down or go away for a period of time is going to cause you not only expense, but reputation and possibly relationships with clients. that's something else that plays into our decision. For us, you know, we outsource our letters. There's no way we could compete on price with a mail house for the volume of mail we send out if we did it internally, printing letters, you know, stamping them, sorting them, folding them, all of that good stuff. So really, that's not a choice for us. We're going to outsource it. If our letter vendor has a problem, that will certainly cost us. But even if that were to happen, it's still dramatically cheaper for us to outsource our mail than it is for us to do it in-house. But for other things, that decision may not be so clear-cut. You know, you may be saving $1,000 a month, but if the service goes down for a week, what is that costing you? So that's something else I would caution people to keep in mind when you're looking to outsource any of the functions within your office.
And I can hop on to your analogy as far as the letters. Our letter vendor does a lot for us. So, and one of the things I love that they do, in addition to a bankruptcy scrub, a deceased scrub, national change of address. That national change of address helps you comply with letter text requirements in other states. You know, you send them a Pennsylvania address and they find out, hey, this guy lives in New York. Your letter vendor is going to put the New York language on that letter and then print it and mail it, and you get those results back. We would never be able to do that in-house. The other thing that I like, I don't know if this is standard now, but at the time you had to ask for it. And it's referred to as letters per envelope. So Mary Sue is a debtor. She has four accounts listed with you today, with different vendors or however you different clients. That would be four validation notices, and the letters per envelope, they're folding and putting them into one envelope. So she's getting all of her letters. She's getting all four letters, but only in one envelope. You have to have pretty strict criteria on that, and we do. But that has saved us a ton, especially in medical. Find out. I would find out what some of your current vendors, what else they do for you, that might be really streamlined and pretty inexpensive.
Good insight. Thank you. I appreciate it. I'm sure everybody who's on the call, I would hope that everyone who's participating today, is looking at growing an agency. It's not just, you know, no one wants to sort of stay the same or be shrinking. Everyone's trying to get bigger and better. So I'm wondering, and Donald, I'll get your insights first. Is it possible to sort of have this mindset of being very vigilant on reducing expenses and still grow an agency at the same time?
I definitely think that you can be vigilant on reducing expenses and still grow. You learn a lot when you start evaluating all of your processes. So I don't know if anybody on the call has gone through any type of lean project, but it's a fun project to do. I guarantee you, if you were just to do one thing, sit, spend half a day with each person or each somebody within that function, and you are going to see that there's a lot of things people do because they were trained that way 5 years ago, 10 years ago, that we don't need to do anymore. I mean, it's amazing. So why are you doing that? And that's how I was trained. Like, you don't need to print 50 pages. You just save it to a file. You know, things like that. You just don't know. People, you know, they don't know. They just do what they were told. When you get lean, you can really eliminate a lot of waste. You can save money in areas where you were spending and become more efficient. And so when I think about cutting costs, I think about how can I How can I get rid of waste and things that aren't needed? And how can I flip that and become more efficient using staff in better ways, cross-training, eliminating things we didn't need, and get real lean without jeopardizing the quality and the compliance and the service that you give to your client. I definitely think that reducing expenses is the way to grow. Definitely possible.
Donna, I would add to that, I don't think it's definitely just possible. I think it's absolutely necessary. Growth is not cheap. With growth comes more capital expenses. You have to pay for more connectivity. You have to pay for more computers. You have to pay for more people. You have to pay to find more people, to train more people, and the learning curve of those people. So growth is not inexpensive. And if you're going to grow, you have to be vigilant about cost reduction. At the same time, you can't cut the quality that you're providing your clients, because there's no sense in adding clients if you're removing other clients, right? But I think that in order to provide that collar room for the growth, you have to stay very vigilant to make sure that you're cost conscious, and probably continually review all of your expenses to the nth degree more than you normally would.
Yeah, and I think one thing, going back to what we talked about earlier on clients and working their accounts, scoring their accounts, I always recommend to people as a first step, figure out what your cost per account is. Simply take your expenses for the year and divide it by the number of accounts that came into your office and get a number. While it's a rough number, it's a starting point nonetheless. And take that across all of your clients and see what your income per account is. Again, just a basic calculation of how much revenue you generated from them versus how many accounts they placed. And start to do some deeper digging into those clients where that number is way above what you're making on average. Because I think when you talk about growth, and you may not realize it at the time, you're growing, but you're adding clients that aren't necessarily making you the money that you need to make in order to pay for them. So you may get a great new client, but because they're a little larger and they want a lower rate, 6 months in, you realize you're paying them to work for them. And that isn't a good thing. So I would caution, when you're looking at growth or your existing status before you try to grow further, and not a lot of people like to say this, is, but you may have some clients that you should be firing. Mm-hmm. And it's the easiest way to cut expenses, because you're literally paying them to work for them. And it's not good for anybody.
I agree wholeheartedly.
Amen, Christian.
Addition by subtraction, I guess. Don, I wanted to circle back to something you mentioned just during your last answer, your lean project. Maybe you could share a few more details about how that works, and because I think that there is a lot of good information in there.
Well, there you can actually hire someone to go through a lean process with you, and or you could. I learned about Six Sigma at a couple of conferences, and some are so in-depth. It depends on the size of your organization. I mean, there's huge hospitals that go through this process. The half of what they talked about didn't apply to our agency. However, I was able to whittle it down and scale it down to a Six Sigma Lean event for us that made sense. And you find the waste. You find people, maybe it's even just wasting time and they don't realize they're wasting time, but they're not only wasting, they're in the efforts or whatever tools they're using to complete the job, but it's a humongous waste of time. You really learn that sometimes there's duplicate work that could have easily been eliminated. And that's where you free up your staff. And that's where you can really get into what we talked about earlier, like the cross-training and becoming more efficient. So I'm not sure if anybody on the call has ever gone through a lean type project, but I highly recommend it. Nothing but good comes out of it. It's pretty interesting. Roger or Chris, have you ever gone through a Six Sigma?
No, we have not gone through anything like that. Although, I mean, those sort of processes are something that we do try to go through on a monthly basis. And I think most of us do, but not anything so formalized as that.
I haven't been.
It can get pretty detailed.
I saw Lean Six Sigma, and I thought they were going to take my snacks away.
That was me behind the scenes.
I see how you are.
I think it's pretty easy to find someone in your area, or even take a course or an online course, and you can figure it out where you want to start. You don't have to do everything that they're saying, but you will have your eyes opened. It's pretty intense, and it can get pretty, they drill down pretty deep. And it's a good exercise to go through. You know, you cut off the fat in the organization and you're running more efficiently. You have your people cross-trained doing more work, where you didn't need to hire a new person, and you're probably saving on inventory as well. I guess that would be my parting word, inventory control. I hate to say it, but we had to lock up a lot of our inventory, the toilet paper, the paper towels, the pens, the markers, all that stuff. I'm sorry to say it, but once we started doing that and had people just request what they needed, it was amazing how much inventory we were hanging on to. I don't know if anybody's had that experience, but
oh yeah,
it happens.
Let's get some those little things. We're almost out of time, but there's one question that's come in that I want to get to because I think it's interesting and could provide some useful information. And the question is, in addition to cutting waste and reducing expenses, do you look to adopting new technologies to improve productivity and thereby reduce expenses? For example, using email instead of letters. And curious what the panel thinks about that. Maybe Roger, you can go first.
I absolutely think that that's an option. We look at that all the time. We do, when we can, responsibly do email letters instead of just letters. We do some things with our telephone systems to, you know, as far as the automated messaging, and we do the voice drops and onto cell phone voicemail applications. We are looking at the texts and some different channels of communication. And I look at cost savings as a happy byproduct to some of these, because the primary driver behind these decisions is additional touch points for consumers and communicating with them in the method and manner in which they want to be communicated with. And let's face it, younger generations don't like to talk on the phone. They will text you until their thumbs are blistering, but to ask them to make a phone call and speak to someone, it's not going to happen. Plus, the technology does help reduce expense, and it could reduce our biggest expense, which is personnel.
Yeah, I'll jump in as well. We constantly look at technology to either improve our processes, or if we're adding new processes, to see if it makes more sense to do it with automation as opposed to a person. I'm relentless. I love my technology toys, and I think there's a very good place for technology in the workplace. Automating things has allowed us to grow without adding staff, as opposed to looking to replace people. We prefer to keep our people as busy as possible. And as we grow and have needs in certain areas, we look to technology as much as we do adding staff. to see if it makes more sense to go that route instead of adding a person.
Right.
Maybe we should be doing these webinars by text from now on, Roger.
I'm texting you that right now, Mike.
Roger just learned how to text. He just learned. He's a little behind the line.
Well, we're out of time, but before I let everybody go, I wanted to thank Roger, Christian, and Donna for their insights and their time today. This webinar would not have been possible without their participation. I also want to thank MicroBuilt for sponsoring today's webinar. Again, you can go to microbuilt.com to learn more about the company or call 800-884-4747 for more information. Thanks to everybody who participated today and asked questions. A recording of this event will be available on accountsrecovery.net in the next day or so. And please stay tuned to accountsrecovery.net for more news and webinars in the very near future. I hope everybody enjoys the rest of your day. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you all.